Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has a new podcast every 2 weeks with up-to-date information about aviation technologies for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 1,900 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years experience in the technology and aviation industries. Would like to welcome Natalie Kelly into the Plain Talk Real Life Pilot Stories cockpit, all about learning about how to survive life-threatening events. Natalie is a flight instructor with 4.5 years under her wings. Welcome, Natalie.
Hi, how are you?
Well, it's another day in paradise, as they say. Actually, here in Toronto, it's severe clear other than the minus 10 centigrade part.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty rainy here today, but hey, that's okay. I'm alive and I'm pretty happy to be here.
No doubt. So, Natalie, you had a hair-raising experience the summer of 2020, experiencing a fuel starvation incident that caused you to land on a road with pesky cars on them.
That's right. I did.
I've always been very cautious about fuel in the airplane that I fly. And I'm a little bit new school, but also a little old school in that I do fly with an iPad. But I still fly with my, let's call it analog kneeboard, which is paper and pen. And during my pre-flight, I always double check the fuel, do the sumps. Mm-hmm. But on my paper knee pad, write down the quantity of fuel in, and then as every 30 minutes, if I'm on a long cross country flight, as you mentioned, switch between tanks, write down on the knee board the time of the switch, and that just gives me that mental reminder.
Right.
So you're on the ground, all the cars have stopped, police are there. How did you get back? How did you get the airplane back to the airport?
We switched fuel tanks. So that was one of the things by not having an emergency checklist, I realized when I tried to restart it, I did not switch the tank. I did the mixture, I did the fuel pump, I did not switch the tank and tried to restart it. And, you know, and if I had an emergency checklist for myself and for the passenger, you know, she could have called those things out to me and made sure that I did it, and maybe it would have restarted. But basically, I switched the fuel tank and started it up, and we had a police escort to that airport that I couldn't quite make to. About 3 miles down the road.
So that must have been quite the parade.
Yeah, it was. Very. If I wasn't crying, maybe I would have laughed. I can laugh about it now. But it was, it was so embarrassing. And it was very, I felt terrible for what I put my friend through. I felt terrible for what I put myself through.
So you got to the airport. I guess the FBO folks were surprised to see you trying to get it through the fence. And did you carry on to that YouTuber event?
You're right, I did. And actually, I didn't want to go. We got back to the hotel after we kind of got the airplane secured, and we talked to the police, and we had, you know, there were like some local news people that wanted to talk, and I didn't want to talk. And We got to the hotel and checked in and had another pilot friend that came to the hotel, and he was actually the one that came and got us from the airport and took us to the hotel. He knew everything that had happened, and I was like, I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to stay here. I just want to stay here, and I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to think about it. I was like in shock, really. I mean, I was still scared. I still couldn't believe what had just happened. You know, I feel like I nearly died, you know, and it was just like any number of things could have gone wrong, and I could be dead right now. My friend could be dead, and my kids are at home, and I mean, it was just, it was hard. And then, a couple hours later, my friend that was with me and the other guy, he was like, look, you're not going to do any good sitting here and thinking about it and thinking about it. If you want to get back into aviation, and you know, if you want to stay in it, what better way to feel that, you know, love from other pilots who are going to feel for you than being at an aviation event and get back on an airplane with someone else? Because I got to fly this thing home. I mean, I was like, I still got to get in this plane and fly home in a couple of days. And I was terrified, and they were having flights and things like that there. So I decided, okay, I'll go. And we didn't talk about it that whole weekend, really, with anybody else. I wasn't really ready to. And it actually took me a long time to be able to talk about it with other people and try to tell them what I learned. You know, I put it in the shop. I did so many things to it. And I wanted to know and understand everything about my airplane that wasn't working right, you know, so I could kind of put it all together and try to learn as much as I could about the whole thing. But yeah, I went, and I did tell another friend there who happened to be an airline pilot and a ferry pilot about the event, and she knew I was going to be really scared to fly the airplane back from taking it to Kansas to fly my friend Alyssa back to St. Louis. She decided that she would fly to St. Louis and meet me there so that she could accompany me from St. Louis back to Cincinnati so that I wouldn't be alone. And that was good because I was terrified to fly that plane. I really was. I wish I could have paid someone to fly back just at home commercially. But I knew, you know, instinctively, like I knew it was not like a major issue. It was fuel. And if I could just keep up with it, then I would be okay. But it was every little bump, every little noise, every little sound was terrifying. I was gripping that stick. I mean, my hand was aching. It was just holding that stick so tight, and I was just looking constantly for a place to land, and it was pretty scary.
So you you know, obviously got it back to your home airport. Since last summer, you've put about 40 hours on the RV-8. How do you feel now?
I still don't trust the airplane. I have not done any aerobatics in it. I still have some issues with it that I don't know. Maybe this is such a bad memory and there's just such a bad vibe with it. I fly it occasionally, not as much as I had planned. I do fly some other airplanes, like a 172, more specifically, mostly. But I don't know what the future of that plane's going to be. I don't know if it's just going to take more time and maybe some more experienced pilots with the RV. More, you know, I've spent a lot of money on trying to get the avionics, to get IFR certified. That's still not. We had to move the magnetometer and do some work with that to kind of get it to work, and it worked for a while, but the heading indicator still gets off, so it's still not IFR certified, which I wanted, and I don't know how much money I want to put into it. And now we've got we've had some metal in the oil filter and oil, and so I'm really cautious about it.
Yeah, that's not a good thing, metal in the oil.
And everybody has a different opinion about it.
Well, I think there's only one opinion, which is the engine's opinion.
Yeah.
And having, yeah. I've personally lived through some engine incidents at altitude. So I absolutely sympathize and understand how you feel.
Yeah.
And I suppose it boils down to a little bit about, you know, the being an experimental aircraft. It's built by an individual or a couple folks and off a set of plans or a quick built kit, but really you're putting your life in that builder's hands. So
yeah.
Do you think you've ever kind of dreamed, shall we say, about what would be that next aircraft to fulfill your aerobatics mission?
I don't know, because I have flown in a lot of RV8s, and I know a lot, there's a huge community of experimental airplane owners at my home base airport, and talking to them, they all seem very, they really like their airplanes, and they are comfortable with them, and they feel like they're very safe, and I hear that they're very safe, and very rarely have I heard anything really negative about it. I don't know if it's just mine, you know, because I had that bad experience so shortly after I got it, if that's kind of tainted my kind of opinion of it. I am not as gung-ho about the aerobatics as I used to be. It's definitely, you know, I talked to someone, she's like an air show pilot, and she had said, you've got to be 100% confident in your airplane if you're going to be doing things like that in it. And I'm not. So I don't know if I love the RV8, and maybe I'll sell this and get a new one. I'm not sure. But, or maybe I'll help someone build one so that I know kind of what's going on. I'm not sure. I'm not in a big hurry right now. So I'm still, you know, hanging on to this one. I still fly it occasionally, and I'm hoping maybe that my confidence will grow in it. And as we keep changing the oil, I'll see it's not getting worse, the metal in the engine and things like that. So I'm not really sure.
Well, no doubt, you know, you lived through a harrowing experience, and you came out the other side without hurting yourself or hurting Alyssa or breaking the airplane or hurting anybody on the ground. So it doesn't really get any better than that.
That's true. Yeah, there was absolutely no damage to the plane, property, or anyone. So that was, you know, if you're going to have an emergency landing, that's the best outcome.
I think, as you said, no one starts a flight thinking that something really horrible, bad is going to happen. And you were able to maintain your composure, work the problem to a safe outcome. So what's next on the horizon, Natalie?
Well, you know, I just got my CFI. So I've got two students that I'm teaching, and a 172, and that's a totally different experience. I'm hoping that I can get my older son into flying, because he's always been interested in it, and I think that would be really fun. It's a new challenge, definitely very different teaching someone than you know, just flying along. So I always like cruising in an airplane and going cross country and going to different airports and experiencing different areas of the country. So I'm going to continue that. I have access to a 172, so I can either use my RV or the 172, but that will continue. And I like to expose aviation still to the students and really teach them what's so great about it and what's fun. So that's probably my primary focus right now, is teaching the students and trying to get more people into flying.
Awesome. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for being part of Plane Talk.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at planetalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at plaintalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.